I will have some tea fetched. That is, your society does drink tea.
Always,
Irene said. Chapter 9. This is a bad idea, Kai said as soon as the door had closed behind Vale.
I am listening,
Irene said as she began to pick at her bandage.
And I am paying attention, and if I do scream, it's because my hand is in worse condition than I thought. Go on.
Why do you trust him? Kai demanded.
I don't.
Irene didn't look up from the tightly wrapped bandages.
Not totally. But I think he's telling the truth about his family and about his gift. I'm not sure he trusts us either.
And that's another thing, Kai said. How can we possibly trust someone who'd betray their family? Irene let the bandages be and looked across at him. He had clenched his fists in his lap so tightly that she could see all the bones of the hand and the blue veins up the inside of his wrist, clear beneath his pale, pale skin.
We don't know the whole of that, she said. We don't know what they may have done to drive him away, if...
But he left them! Kai was nearly shouting. He controlled himself with an effort, rising to stand in front of Irene. He admitted as much. If he really disagreed with them, then he should have stayed with them and tried to change them from the inside. To just leave them, to walk out on them, to disobey his own parents. How can that possibly be justified? Irene looked down at her hand again, partly to think, partly so that Kai shouldn't see her own expression. Didn't he realize how much he was giving away about himself, or did he just not care? That sort of openness was, in its way, intoxicating.
I hardly ever see my own parents, she said, and wondered at the quietness of her own voice.
But you haven't defied them, or deserted them.
Kai dropped to his knees, looking up into her face.
You followed their tradition. They were librarians, and so are you. I'm not saying that he should love his family, not if they really were malicious, but he shouldn't have left them. You can't trust a man who'd do that.
I'm not saying we should trust him, Irene said. I'm saying that we need to work with him.
She felt very cold, and she wasn't sure if it was because of her hand, or the earlier shock, or her own words.
To serve the library, I would work with murderers, or thieves, or revolutionaries, or traitors, or anyone who will give me what I need. Do you understand me, Kai? This is important.
She reached out with her unwounded hand to touch the side of his face.
I am sealed to the library. I can make my own choices to some extent, but at the end of the day, bringing back the book the library wants is my duty and my honor. And that is all there is to it.
Have you ever been forced to choose between the library and your honor? Kai demanded.
Kai, Irene said. The library is my honor. And if you seal yourself to it, then it'll be yours too.
She could feel herself smiling grimly.
But you've already told me that you don't have any living family, haven't you? So it's not a choice you'll ever have to make.
Kai didn't even flinch at that. He simply glared at her. You're confusing the issue. There ought to be a way of finding our book that doesn't involve allying ourselves with an honorless, family-betraying creature like this. Irene, please. Walk out now and tell him no. We don't need this kind of help.
Irene tried to think of a way to make him understand. Perhaps she was being too abstract in an attempt to make him comprehend this specific case. Damn it all. He was going to have to face tough moral choices himself someday. If he really wanted to be a librarian. If he survived. Leaving aside the question of his personal honor, she said. We're not in a good situation. Dominic Aubrey's dead. There's an enemy in the city, quite possibly Alberic, and maybe others too. We're cut off from a direct retreat. And though I may be able to open a way back.
May, Kai broke in. What do you mean, May?
Irene raised her bandaged hand. I mean that I may be chaos contaminated. I need to find out. I should get better in a few days, but at the moment, I may not be able to open a way to the library. It would keep me out in the same way that it'd keep out anything chaos tainted. So we don't have a convenient escape route. Oh, Kai said. He bit his lip. She was actually far less certain than she was willing to admit about how long it might take for her to access the library again. It wasn't something that had happened to her before. She knew the theory, but this was her first case of actual contamination. Thinking about it made her feel ill. She wanted peace and quiet and a chance to actually look at her hand, plus a small library where she could run some tests. Unfortunately, what she had here and now was a nervous and highly principled subordinate to reassure. It wasn't a leader's place to cast oneself trembling on a junior's shoulder and confess uncertainty. It wasn't even a leader's place to suggest that they might be in an indefensible position and should be grateful for any allies that they could get. It was a leader's job to project a calm mastery of the situation, while also encouraging subordinates to develop decision-making skills, assuming that they made the right decisions. The leader's job was a crock of shit. This was becoming one of Irene's least favorite missions ever, and that included the one with the evil dwarves under Belgium. What was it about Belgium? And the one requiring a cartload of carved amber plaques to be shipped across Russia, or even the one with the cat burglar. Would it help if we could find out more about his family? She offered. If we found out that they're not as bad as he's painting, we can reevaluate how much we trust him. Kai shook his head decisively. That makes no difference. We should reject his offer of help. That, Irene said quietly, is not an option. They looked at each other for a moment. Kai's lips were drawn together, his eyes darkly furious as he stood there, glaring down at her. In that moment, there was something almost inhuman about him, something fiercer, more elemental, perhaps. For the first time, she thought he might actually disobey her. In the end, he was the first to drop his eyes. "As you command," he said. "But I don't approve of it," was unspoken and unnecessary. Irene had met other librarians who tried to manage their subordinates using shallow gender tactics. Bradamant, for one. She hadn't liked it. She wasn't going to try to sugarcoat this for Kai by softening now or by fluttering her eyelashes at him. "Did you bring our stuff along when you got me out of the British Library?" she asked.
"I did," Kai answered stiffly. "Both your document case and the jar with the skin."
"I'm impressed," Irene said. "It must have been difficult to handle both them and me." Kai shrugged, but she had the feeling that he was pleased.
"I found a larger suitcase in the room, and I managed to get the jar and your document case in it. Do we tell Vale about those?"
"No," Irene said quickly. "That he doesn't need to know. Did anything else happen while you were getting me out of there? People following us? Attacks? Whatever?"
"Nothing worth mentioning," Kai said smugly. "I wrapped your face in your veil and propped you against my shoulder and got my arm round your waist and sort of steered you, and I kept on telling you how you shouldn't have had so much gin last night. Nobody looked at us twice."
"Very prompt thinking," Irene said dryly. "Well done. Good job. And good selection of a place to hole up."
"If I'd known then what I know now," Kai muttered, but not quite as sullenly as before.
"You did the best you could on the information you had," Irene said. She started peeling off the bandage again.
"Are you sure it's safe to do that?" Kai asked. "You don't want to get it infected."
"I just want to see how bad it is." A chunk of bandage fell back to reveal a layer of ointment-soaked dressing. Bits of raw skin showed at the edges, red and oozing. A twinge of pain ran through her hand, and Irene suppressed a wince. "All right," she said through gritted teeth. "Who saw to this?"
"I did," Kai said. "That trap took the skin off your hand as neatly as if, well, as if it was a glove being peeled off."
He went down on one knee and took her hand in his, winding the bandage round it again.
"Vale gave me some antiseptics and bandages, and I set some healing spells on it. But try not to use it too much."
His touch was careful and precise, his fingers dry and hot when they brushed her wrist.
"Normally, I'd say that you can take the bandages off in a couple of days. But I don't know about chaos contamination."
"I can check that easily enough," Irene said confidently. This room has enough books in it for me to try asserting basic resonance.
Kai glanced around at the heavily shelved walls. You don't need to be in a real library for that.
Irene shrugged, then grimaced in pain as the movement twisted her hand in Kai's hold.
Sorry, she said, as he gave her a disapproving look.
Not exactly. I'd need to be in a real library to open a passage, but a single room of books is enough for me to reaffirm my links. Of course, it has to be a lot of books.
She smiled for a moment, remembering the smell of old celluloid and dustless air.
Actually, any significant store of knowledge or fiction can be made to function. I did it in a film storage section once, an archive of old television programs, not a single book in sight, all film reels and computer data, but the similarity in purpose and function was enough.
Go on.
Kai leaned forward eagerly.
Do it.
All right. Irene was nervous now that it actually came down to it. She'd spoken glibly enough about contamination, and while she knew the theory on the subject, it'll wear off, just be sensible and avoid further exposure, and stay away from the library until you're clear. She'd never actually experienced it herself.
You may want to stand away from the walls.
I'm nowhere near the walls, Kai pointed out.
Oh, right. Irene swallowed. Okay.
She took a deep breath, wetted her dry lips, and invoked the library by her name and by her rank as librarian, speaking the words in the language which described it. Unlike nouns or other parts of speech, words that described the library or the language themselves were among the few parts of the language that never changed. The bandages covering her hand burst into flame. The shelves on the walls shuddered and groaned, wrenching from side to side and creaking like living trees in a winter storm, and books tumbled to crash on the floor. Tossed aside newspapers and piles of notes rustled and moved, crawling along the floor in fractions of an inch, writhing away from her like crushed moths. The fountain pen on the desk jolted and rolled across the open notebook where it had been balanced, trailing ink behind it in a dark, wet line.
What the devil?
Vale burst in, carrying an enameled tea tray.
What do you think you're doing?
Excuse me, Kai snapped, grabbing the blue and white milk jug off the tray. He caught Irene's wrist in his other hand and shoved her blazing bandaged hand into the jug, flames and all. There was a hiss and a gout of steam, and her hand went out.
Thank you,
Irene said, trying to get her breathing stable again. Her hand ached as if it had been stung by wasps all over and then left to get sunburned.
I'm so sorry about the milk, but I take my tea black anyway.
She was conscious that she was babbling, but she had to say something to try to explain things. And besides, her hand hurt.
My books!
Vale exclaimed in horror, looking around the room.
My notes! My!
He stood there, tea tray shaking in his hands, glaring down at her in fury.
Miss Winters, kindly explain yourself.
Irene considered a number of things. She considered fainting. She considered claiming that it was a magical attack. She considered just giving up on Vale and walking out the door. She also, with a pang of regret, considered how she'd feel if it had been her books all over the floor.
Finally, she said, I'm sorry, Mr. Vale. I was trying something and it went wrong.
Vale set down his tray on the nearest bit of uncluttered table with an audible thump and tinkle.
Something went wrong, he said coldly.
Yes, Irene said.
She pulled her hand out of the jug. It dripped milk.
I'm terribly sorry.
Vale tapped his fingers against the surface of the tray.
May I ask if something is going to go wrong again in the near future?
I think it very unlikely, Irene said hopefully. I'm terribly sorry. Could I have some clean bandages, please?
Vale stared at her. I've never seen her do it before, Kai put in. It was an accident.
Simply an accident, Irene agreed. I truly am extremely sorry.
I'm sure you are, Vale spat out. Very well. Bandages.
He slammed the door behind him as he left the room.
What does that mean?
Kai demanded.
The books, the papers.
It means I'm contaminated after all, Irene said quickly and quietly. We can't get into the library until I'm clear, and I can't use the language reliably.
Kai stared at her.
You're being awfully calm about this.
Having your hand catch fire puts things into perspective, Irene said. Any words would do, anything that kept her from panicking. She couldn't afford to panic. She was contaminated with chaos, sick with the stuff, and she could only hope that she was right, that it would go away in time. But now she had to hold together and be in charge. I find that it distracts me.
Kai just looked at her for a few seconds longer, then turned to glare at the door.
I don't believe Vale swallowed that.
I'd say it's fairly conclusive proof that he needs our help badly, Irene said.
Vale stalked back in with a basin of water and some bandages.
Far be it from me to criticize, he said, but setting the afflicted body part on fire is not a usual form of treatment for an injured hand, though I hear that milk is high in calcium.
Kai gave Vale one of his affronted looks.
Are you challenging Miss Winters' actions, sir? Oh, no, no, Vale said. I will go so far as to spend the next half hour or so picking up the books which are, for some reason, all over my floor, and let you tend to her hand, unless the lady herself has something to contribute.
Actually, Irene said, I do, but I can do it while Kai is seeing to my hand, if you don't mind.
Fortunately, staring at her hand gave her an excuse not to look at Vale. She knew that she must be blushing.
Of all the stupid, ridiculous things to happen, this was not calculated to impress him at all.
Kai snorted, then sat down next to her and began to remove the soaked bandages.
Please do go ahead, he said. What do you have in mind? Besides your inability to contact the library,
came through the words quite clearly.
I think we are all agreed that the Liechtenstein Embassy is involved in...
Ow, careful!
This, Irene said, clenching her free hand.
Sorry, Kai said, more as a pro forma than in genuine apology. Hold still. I would agree, Vale said.
He picked up a couple of books off the floor and dusted their covers tenderly.
Especially given that Lord Silver placed a very high bid by proxy for that book when it was being auctioned. Quite interesting, don't you think?
Irene nodded. That was extremely interesting.
Then I suggest we attend the embassy ball tonight, she said firmly.
What? Kai said in horror. Mingle with the... That is, are you serious? Do you realize the danger we'd be putting ourselves in? Mr. Strongrock overstates the situation, Vale observed. But it isn't possible in any case. I agree that it is worth investigating, but unfortunately we won't be able to get in. The affair is strictly invitation only, and even if I can enter the place disguised, I'm not sure that either of you would be able to do so. I agree that the Fae are probably behind it, Kai put in. But there has to be a better way of investigating them, as this one isn't going to work.
No, Irene said. It will work, because I have an invitation.
Excellent, Vale exclaimed.
And, she added, I'll need a new dress.
And a new hand, Kai asked through gritted teeth.
Irene managed to catch his eye.
Trust me, she said.
Oh, I do, Kai said. I just happen to think that this is one of the most reckless, harebrained, soul-endangering plans I have heard of since...
He broke off.
Never mind. I'm under your orders. But that invitation had better be for three people.
It'll do,
Irene said serenely, and tried to stay calm and composed and everything that she didn't feel.
Chapter 10
Irene stood back and watched Kai at the buffet. There was something fascinating about the pure, focused dedication that he gave the caviar. It seemed to somehow elevate the little black grains into something holy, even divine. The curve of his wrist as he scooped it onto a triangle of toast was the last word in elegant efficiency. Of course, there were other reasons to watch. Thanks to Vale's tailoring recommendations, Irene was decorously gowned in a nice dark green. But Kai... well... Kai managed to wear evening dress with a personal style that made Irene work very hard on repressing jealousy and on stifling a half-formed wish that she'd accepted his offer last night. It was not her business that Kai had such an air of inherent power, or the elegance of a nobleman combined with a somehow touching air of raffishness. That made her think. When she'd first seen him, he'd been in leather jacket and jeans, with a young ruffian attitude to match. But once they'd established themselves here, he'd shifted his style and his language as effectively as any spy, and that wasn't a comforting thought, easing into a more cheerful politeness that had certainly mollified her. At the ball, he'd adjusted himself again without a moment's hesitation. She took a sip from her glass of wine held in her left hand. Dry white, appropriate for the largely fish buffet. She still trusted him. That enthusiasm, that vigorous, cheerful offering of himself that night, and even his unwillingness to accept what he thought was a dangerous course of action, both rang true to her. Whoever he was, whatever he was sincere, and he was on her side. He couldn't be a fully-fledged librarian. He wouldn't have been so willing to share a bed with her if he'd needed to hide the requisite library brand. That was one thing which makeup wouldn't cover, as Irene knew from personal experience. And she didn't think he was a creature of chaos. His distrust of all things fae seemed very real. A nature spirit, perhaps? But from what she'd read... non-human spirits didn't actually like taking human form that much. And then again, there was one significant alternative. She stared at the back of Kai's head and thought about everything that she knew about dragons, and wished she knew more. There were dragons, after all, who looked like, well, dragons. And then dragons who could take a partly human form. She'd met one of those, and sensed a pride so sublimely unaware of itself that it was somehow graceful. There'd been the sense of a being apart, and definitely not human. She didn't get that from Kai, except he did have the dignity. And Kai looked human. Impossibly handsome, but entirely human. Yet, she'd been told that dragons could take that shape as well, if they wanted. Irene felt a rising sense of outrage at the thought that Capalia must have known, if this was true. So why hadn't she said? And why had Bradamant wanted him?
"My little mouse, I believe," a voice said from behind her. "How good of you to come."
Irene had enough of a grip on herself not to spill her wine, just about. And she hadn't been so engrossed in her student that she'd forgotten to watch the crowd. She just hadn't seen him coming. She turned and dropped into a curtsy, flicking a brief glance up at his face before lowering her eyes. "Lord Silver?" She had no idea whether or not he deserved the title, but it'd probably please him. He was as formally dressed as Kai, with some unspecified military order on his chest, and his pale hair was draped loosely over his shoulders. "Thank you for your kind invitation."
"You do pick the most interesting people to accompany you," he said. His tone was amused rather than dangerous. "But I appreciate it. I'd have invited Leeds myself if I'd thought of it."
"I didn't realize you were on those sorts of terms with him, sir," Irene said.
"I'm not."
His lips curved in a private smile.
"Very definitely not."
Irene straightened out of her curtsy. "The ball seems very successful," she said neutrally. Silver glanced across the room with a smile of casual ownership. He scooped up a plate from the buffet, casually loaded it with a handful of crab pate puffs, and offered it to her.
"I should hope so," he said. "I've invited all the best people. Lords, ladies, authors, ambassadors, debauchers, grave robbers, perverts, sorcerers, courtesans, deranged scientists, and doll makers. And a few innocent socialites, of course. But generally, I receive polite notes of refusal from their parents. Or invitations to be horsewhipped.
Invitations, Irene said.
Notes offering to horsewhip me in front of my club if I even approach their daughters.
Irene swallowed nervously. Was it a joke? Should she so much as touch the crab pate puffs? Some people might call that a threat, sir.
A threat?
He looked at her, genuine puzzlement in his eyes.
Why on earth would you think that?
She couldn't quite bring herself to look him in the eyes while replying. If that was an example of fey tastes, then she wasn't going to push it any further. They must be people of very limited scope, sir, clearly. He patted her shoulder fondly. His gloves were white kid, soft against her skin, and she could feel the heat of his flesh through them. It was more of a casual flash of power, as a shark might show its fin, than a deliberate attempt to englamour and seduce her. But she could feel it all the same. Kai was still over by the caviar, but watching her with narrowed eyes, as sharp as a snake. She shook her head minutely, warning him to keep away. Vale looked bored and was talking on the other side of the room to a hunched man with a brass-rimmed monocle screwed into his right eye. The room itself was large enough to hold about 150 people comfortably, with buffet tables around the edges and waiters circulating silently. Improbable swords and lances hung along the walls in glittering decoration, with Liechtenstein banners positioned above. A string quartet in the corner picked through something light and unobtrusive. The whole room had an unwholesome feel to it. A hothouse sort of closeness and oppression, even though the temperature was perfectly normal. Irene wondered whether everyone present was hiding secrets, something that affected their every word and action.
Even me, she thought, with more than a touch of irony.
Silver squeezed her shoulder again.
I'll be back, he said smoothly. Don't go away.
Between one blink and the next, he was gone. Irene put her glass down before she was tempted to drink even more wine. There had to be some way to lure out Belphegor, or whoever had killed the vampire and taken the book. If this ball was as packed with key society suspects as she expected, here would be the perfect place to gather information. Several conversations, and about 15 minutes later, she'd reached the Yoruban ambassador, a kindly-looking man, a full head taller than her. He was sporting some sort of ceremonial outfit with gold bracelets that weighed more than her entire gown. She wondered how Silver had got him to visit.
So you see, she lied with the utmost sincerity, I'm writing an article on important figures in the literary world. I was going to interview Lord Wyndham, but his tragic death.
She let her voice trail away artistically.
I never knew that Lord Wyndham was a literary figure, the ambassador queried.
Well, not as such, but he does seem to have been very au fait with up-and-coming novelists. I'd heard that he acted as patron to some.
Ah,
the ambassador said comprehendingly.
I only knew about his collection.
Since Irene had entirely invented the bit about his patronage of new writers, she wasn't surprised.
It was a fine one, she agreed, and he was always so good about making books available to other experts in the field. Not like some bibliophiles who hoard everything and then just gloat about it privately.
The ambassador looked slightly furtive, then loomed forward.
One hesitates to speak ill of the dead, he said in lowered tones. But I think that is giving the gentleman a little too much credit. He was inclined to boast. His nature, you know, vampires. They just can't resist it. I've known some very pleasant ones, of course, he added hastily.
Oh, of course,
Irene added quickly and meaninglessly. But I do think that you're right, Your Excellency. They are so very proud of their advantages.
Exactly, the ambassador said approvingly. I am glad that our host hasn't brought any here tonight. They always demand to be catered for in such an obtrusive manner. The blood, the open veins, all that manner of thing. It does get in the way of our simple conversation.
Irene nodded, suppressing annoyance that Silva hadn't invited any. She'd have liked the chance to question a few. In fact, why hadn't Silva invited them if he enjoyed their company? Or even if he was feuding with them? From what Silva had said about the guest list, inviting half a dozen antagonistic vampires seemed like just the sort of thing that he'd do. It does make matters simpler for everyone else, she agreed.
And we're spared the anti-blood sports protesters.
The ambassador collected a fresh glass of wine from a passing waiter.
But if you're a reporter, you've probably interviewed a few of them already.
He rumbled a deep laugh. I like to think there's something to be said on both sides, Irene temporized. But about Lord Wyndham's boasts. Oh, I beg your pardon. Vale was walking towards them, a slight urgency to his movement. If you will excuse me a moment, Your Excellency.
Of course,
the ambassador said.
About that interview later.
I will contact your embassy staff, sir, Irene said, and retreated with another polite curtsy. Vale shepherded her back over to the buffet table. Was she ever going to get away from it? And made an obvious show of getting her some canapes.
Miss Winters, we need to be careful, he muttered. One of my contacts tells me that there's going to be a strike here at the Liechtenstein Embassy this evening.
Irene suppressed a groan. How many factions were involved in this thing? How was she supposed to conduct a rational investigation with this sort of interference? Who's doing the striking? She demanded in a murmur. And can we use it as a diversion to search the embassy? Vale regarded her from under lowered eyebrows.
Miss Winters, that's a very felonious suggestion.
But it's a very practical one, she said, reminding herself that he was a private detective, though he didn't seem to be particularly disapproving. Perhaps it was the fact that she'd suggested it rather than him which had forced him to condemn it.
Humph.
He shoveled more salmon onto her plate. At this rate, she'd have indigestion.
In answer to your first question, the protesters are the Iron Brotherhood. They are notoriously anti-fey, so it wouldn't be out of character for them.
Do you think it would be worth notifying the embassy staff? She asked. Vale shook his head.
They'll already be expecting something like this. I checked earlier, and they have all the usual precautions. Anti-Zeppelin guns, glamours, whatever. But do be careful, Miss Winters. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to speak to that lady who just came in.
The lady in question was currently invisible behind a squadron of male admirers. So Irene watched Vale edge across the ballroom and tried to hide her overstuffed plate behind a bowl of soup.
There's something going on, Kai said from behind her shoulder.
Irene very nearly spilled the soup.
Really?
She said through gritted teeth.
Absolutely, Kai said. Let me get you some of those blinis.
He picked up a new plate and started depositing more food on it.
You need to eat more. It'll help the healing process.
I also need to be able to walk without falling over, Irene said,
watching with growing unease as he ladled on something involving crab meat. Or dance? Kai edged a little closer.
Have you found out anything yet?
He muttered. Irene considered the facts she'd picked up so far.
I think Silver's waiting for something, or someone. He seemed on edge, but he's being distracted by the glitterati.
She could see him at the other side of the ballroom, talking to a voluptuous pair of women in black, who hung on each other's shoulders, clearly already half drunk.
I've been talking to a couple of other people. Apparently, it's odd that Silva hasn't invited any other vampires tonight. I'm wondering if Wyndham's attack might have been anti-vampire rather than anti-fae. And I'd like to ask Vale a few more questions about his family and if they have any links to vampires. Oh, and Vale thinks there's going to be an attack on the Liechtenstein Embassy by an anti-fae society called the Iron Brotherhood, and...
Oh, Kai, please not the sour cream.
You need it for a proper contrast with the blinis, Kai said firmly.
Have you found out anything? Irene asked.
Nothing definite, Kai said slowly. And, well, I haven't actually been trying to talk to any of the other Fae here. I don't think they'd tell us anything useful.
Uh-huh, Irene agreed neutrally. But have you found out anything from anyone else?
That lady in the corner.
Kai flicked a glance to their left. The woman in question was elderly, rouged, half buried under a vast white wig, and dressed in a construction of black and white striped satin that was viciously corseted and heavily underwired.
She's very well informed, and she actually is part of the literary world, not just a poseur like Wyndham was.
What's her name? Irene asked.
Miss Olga Retrograde, Kai said. The elder Miss Olga Retrograde. She said so several times.
Irene wondered what the younger Miss Retrograde looked like as she moved towards her. You'd better introduce us. What is she?
A retired lady of pleasure, Kai said, rather flatly.
Well, at least she won't assume I'm looking for a job, Irene said cheerfully. Oh, Kai, don't look at me like that. The crowd drifted apart, and Irene could finally see who had just entered the room. It was Bradamant. She was as perfect as a black-and-white photograph, her slender neck rising out of the deep grey silk folds of her bodice like a swan, the train of her dress undulating in smooth, liquid elegance. Kai frowned as Irene broke off mid-sentence, then followed her gaze.
What?
He hissed.
Her? Here? How?
Four very good questions, Irene said through gritted teeth. My God, she's wearing a Worth gown. That has to be a Worth gown. Kai turned to stare at Irene.
What's the gown got to do with it? He asked. Is it particularly effective in concealing weapons or something?
No, Irene spat. It's just one of the best dresses from one of the best dressmakers of the period, or whatever the equivalent is in this alternate. Dear heavens, not only does she come in here to try to steal my mission from under me, she has the nerve to do it while wearing something which screams, "Here I am, everyone look at me. I mean, do I go round collecting outfits from alternates just so I can be the best-dressed person at a party?"
Irene, Kai said, you're holding my arm a bit tightly.
Irene had to stop herself grinding her teeth. A librarian is supposed to be about subtlety, she muttered. Getting the job done, not being noticed. Oh, sorry. She removed her hand from Kai's forearm and watched Kai affrontedly smooth out the wrinkles on his jacket sleeve. She could feel herself flushing. I apologize.
What she wanted to do was scream,
"How dare she!" until the chandeliers tinkled, but she couldn't.
Perhaps she has important information and wanted to talk to you, Kai said.
But how would she know we were here? Or, wait,
Irene frowned.
Dominic Aubrey could have told her. Did she enter this alternate before he died?
Or did she have something to do with it? Kai said slowly, completing Irene's own thought.
Irene was silent for a long moment, turning possibilities over in her head. Unthinkable, she finally said. I won't believe that of her. At that moment, the crowd shifted again, and Bradamant turned her head. She looked across the ballroom, and for a moment, their eyes met. And in that moment, Irene saw something in Bradamant's face which she hadn't expected to see. Shock. She didn't expect us to be here, she murmured. Bradamant recovered almost instantaneously, and turned away with a contemptuous little twitch of her shoulder to bestow her attention on the man next to her. A skinny white-haired man in his 80s, with his chest so encrusted with military medals and orders that it was a wonder he didn't fall over. "Why don't you introduce me to Miss Olga Retrograde?" Irene said to Kai, composing her face to what should, with any luck, be a pleasant smile. She'd work out what was going on. And this time she wasn't going to be Bradamant's stalking horse, decoy, or tool. Not this time.
Not again. Very well, Kai said, glancing at Bradamant over Irene's shoulder. But what is she doing here? I know she said she wanted the mission. His face lightened as the thought obviously occurred to him. If she's your senior, then maybe she has clearance now for you to cooperate on the mission. That would make things simpler with the chaos contamination.
Such a thing is possible, Irene said slowly, to give herself time to think and to find an answer why this could not, would not be the case. She wasn't sure that she would be able to physically obey if it were. Her loathing of the other woman was too bone deep for that.
But if it were the case, how careful, how conditional. Then she would have some sort of token from the library, and she'd show it to me. She hasn't even tried to find me yet, so I'm dubious.
I trust you, Kai said. He touched her hand briefly, reassuringly. I do trust you, Irene. I wish that you could tell me why you don't trust her.
She could have said, it's private, but something in her felt that he deserved better than that from her. Instead, she said,
it's personal, and if you really do want to know, I'll tell you later. It doesn't make her any worse as a librarian, just as a person, to me. But later, all right?
Kai nodded, and then they were there.
Miss Retrograde, he said. May I introduce my friend, Miss Winters?
Irene gave a small curtsy.
Miss Retrograde, it's a pleasure to meet you.
And you, my dear, the elderly woman said.
Close up, her face was all rouge, white paint, and beauty patches. She deserved an award for thoroughness in concealing wrinkles, if not for artistry in doing so. Her dress might be heavily corseted and old-fashioned, but the fabric was high quality, and the diamonds on her fingers looked genuine.
I understand that you're not from these parts.
Kai must have given her the Canadian cover story.
Oh, no, Irene agreed. But I'm working as a freelance reporter at the moment.
Oh, no, you're not, Miss Retrograde cut in.
Irene shut her mouth before it could gape open too wide.
I beg your pardon, she hastily said.
My dear, Miss Retrograde said, I make it my business to know all the members of the Fourth Estate in London, and I wouldn't have missed an intelligent-looking girl like yourself.
Irene would have given Kai a venomous look, along the lines of,
what have you got me into, and why didn't you tell me more about this?
But it would have been too obvious a betrayal.
I'm very new on the scene, she said quickly.
I've been watching Silver, Miss Retrograde said.
She leaned forward with a creak of whalebone, her beady eyes focused in their heavily shadowed sockets.
He spoke to you. I'd like to know why.
Irene suspected that playing innocent wasn't going to work here. She could feel Kai's arm tense under her hand, waiting, hopefully, for her to tell him which way to jump.
I'm afraid that would depend on why you want to know, she finally said, letting the humor drain out of her face.
I could make it worth your while, Miss Retrograde said, rubbing the ball of her thumb against one of her diamond rings suggestively.
Irene tilted an eyebrow. There was some sort of noise in the corridor outside, thumping and crashes, but she didn't take her eyes off the older woman. If the Iron Brotherhood, or whoever, was attacking, then hopefully someone else would deal with it.
Oh, very well, the woman said pettishly. That was crass, I admit it. Let's get down to business. Take a seat, young woman. Have your bodyguard. I'm not stupid, young man. Have your bodyguard fetch us both some more wine. Then we can discuss matters.
And at that moment, the alligators burst into the room. Chapter 11 Irene had only ever seen alligators at the zoo before. She remembered them as being lazy, log-like objects draped over cement rock formations or dozing in muddy pools. The creatures invading the room moved with disturbing speed. If they were logs, then they were logs on a river in full flood. Some of them were 15 feet or so long, their mouths opened and closed as they scuttled forwards.
One of them clamped its jaws on the leg of a waiter and rolled sideways. The man screamed and went down. His leg came off in the alligator's jaws, wrenched off like a chicken wing, spraying blood across the polished floor. Through the melee, Irene spotted metal contraptions bolted onto their skulls and metal screwed onto their claws before the press of the crowd became too great. Guests and waiters were screaming and running for the other doors as alligators continued to spill through the main entrance. A few of the guests were firing previously concealed weapons, a mixture of pistols and ray guns, but most were simply trying to escape. The smell of blood was sharp and coppery on the air, rising above the blend of perfume and food.
"Have no fear,"
Silver shouted, leaping onto a convenient table, bestriding a centerpiece of oysters.
"The powers of my kind shall scourge these creatures back to the slime from which they crawled."
Amazing grammar in a crisis, Irene couldn't help noticing.
"Behold!"
Silver raised his hand. Fire flared round his fingers dramatically, then leapt to strike the alligators in burning orange whips.
It fizzled. There was no other word for it. The flames drooped and went out as if they'd been doused with cold water, leaving the alligators to rumble forward, undeterred.
"Damnation," Silver swore. "They have been armored in cold iron. Johnson, my elephant gun."
Much as Irene would have enjoyed watching whatever happened next, fleeing the room before she was trampled by the crowd or eaten by alligators seemed a better idea.
"Quick," she snapped at Kai. "Help Miss Retrograde."
"The elder Miss Retrograde, if you please, young lady,"
the older woman said, rising to her feet.
"I knew I should have brought my pistol with me."
They were jostled and bumped, but there was still just enough space to move freely as long as they kept next to the walls.
"Does this happen often at these balls?" Kai asked.
He seemed half fascinated by the chaos, half appalled by it. There were enough screaming, fleeing waiters and partygoers that the alligators weren't going to reach them for at least a few minutes. Hopefully Bradamant could take care of herself. The elder Miss Retrograde clicked her tongue.
"People should know what to expect at a party thrown by Lord Silver," she said. "Now, what is going on over there?"
The headlong escape was curdling in its tracks as people came running back into the room. Over the hubbub, Irene could hear yelling about the outer doors being locked.
"This smells planned," Kai remarked.
"It is," Irene said. "The Iron Brotherhood?"
"It has their stink,"
the elder Miss Retrograde sniffed.
"Did you notice the cold iron on the alligator's claws? The easiest way to deflect Fey sorcery. I'm afraid we can't expect anything from Lord Silver tonight."
"Won't his subordinates be trying to rescue him?"
Kai asked. He cast a thoughtful glance at the weapons hanging on the wall. The elder Miss Retrograde twitched a ruffled shoulder.
"A couple of them may, but I can almost guarantee that the rest will be thinking about promotion, so we'll take care not to rescue anyone until it's too late. Are either of you two young people skilled with alligators? Do they teach alligator training in Canada?"
"Let me try something," Irene said, stepping forward.
An alligator turned its head and upper body, one rolling eye focused on her. Irene swallowed. This was not a time to give in to the roiling fear which churned in her stomach. This was not a time to consider that all she knew about alligators came from reading Rudyard Kipling. Or had those been crocodiles? This was the time to remember she was a librarian and that she had a responsibility to protect Kai. She suppressed the urge to cross her fingers, raised her hand and pointed it at the nearest alligator, and commanded it in the language to lock its legs and stay still. It nearly worked. The words were clear in her mouth, but something in the air, or still lingering in her body, twisted them and wrenched them out of focus. She felt the marks on her hand reopen under the bandages, and saw traces of scarlet start to seep up through her glove. The alligator's legs locked, that much worked. It squinted at her with a reptilian look of cold hatred as it skidded on the polished floor and came sliding right at her, gliding like a doom-laden missile with huge, and getting huger by the minute, jaws. There was something hypnotic about those jaws. She should have been fleeing,
but the sight held her until she thought that she could count every one of the approaching teeth.
"Hell,"
Kai said, and caught her by the waist, tossing her up onto the nearby table. Irene managed to catch herself with her good hand, pulling her skirts away from a steaming tureen of soup as the alligator went sliding by under the table. The white tablecloth rippled as the alligator went under one side and came out on the other, continuing its skid along the highly polished floor until it crashed nose first into the wall. It lay there, opening and closing its mouth and rolling from side to side, tail thrashing, apparently unable to flex its legs.
"I'm afraid it's not working properly," Irene informed Kai.
"Well, that much is obvious."
Kai offered the elder Miss Retrograde his arm.
"Madam, if you'd kindly get up on the table."
"And what are you going to do, young man?"
the woman demanded. Irene could tell what Kai wanted to do. It was evident in the set of his shoulders, the tension of his face.
"One of the most important aspects of command is not giving orders that won't be obeyed," she reminded herself. "Get a sword down from the wall, Kai," she said. "Find Vale. Help him if he needs it. Do what you can to sort this out. I'll take care of myself."
Kai raised his head, and there was a dangerous gladness in his eyes.
"Do you really mean that?" he asked.
"I am perfectly capable of staying out of the way of a few alligators," Irene said coolly.
Especially if she stayed up on the table, but it would spoil the statement to add that.
"I don't think they can climb."
"I hope not."
The elder Miss Retrograde rapped Kai on the shoulder.
"I'll take that assistance, young man. You two can tell me why you're pretending to be Canadian later."
Kai put one hand under the elder Miss Retrograde's elbow, bent to put the other hand under her shoe, and boosted her up on the table with barely a sign of effort.
"Later," he promised, and ran.
He was heading for a low-hanging banner, which dangled temptingly near a pair of ornate sabers hanging 8 feet up. Elsewhere around the room, Irene could see other men and women climbing on the tables, some of which had given way in the process. It was sheer luck that there had only been a few people left in their corner of the room, and so the tables were comparatively unoccupied. This was apparently not one of those alternate worlds where the British Empire mandated a tradition of women and children first. It was a case of survival of the fittest, and alligators take the hindmost. From her vantage point, she looked around, finally sighting Bradamant. She was athletically swinging herself onto a free table and tossing a platter of mussels into the jaws of the pursuing alligator in one smooth motion. The alligator paused, grunting and shaking its head, as Bradamant smoothed her skirts and looked around. Irene's and Bradamant's eyes met. For a moment, they looked at each other across the room. Then Bradamant turned away, with a jerk of her head and a little smile. She scanned the crowd, clearly looking for someone else. Irene swallowed bile. Was she still so preoccupied by Bradamant that she had to look for where she was first and be sure that she was safe? Interest in a fellow librarian's welfare only went so far. And where was Vale? With a pang of guilt, she scanned the crowd for him, too, finally managing to catch sight of him. He'd been backed into a corner by two alligators and was defending himself with a silver tray as best he could. Of course, he would have had to leave his sword stick at the door. It didn't look good.
"Kai!"
Irene turned to him. He'd managed to climb up the banner, almost high enough to reach the sabers.
"Help Vale! Over there!"
Judging by his frown, Kai could see Vale struggling even better than she could. He clamped the banner between his legs, reached up with both hands, and grabbed the hilts of both sabers. Then he simply let go. The sabers came free from their brackets with a shriek of metal, and Kai fell the 8 feet to the ground, twisting smoothly in midair to land on both feet.
"Vale!"
he shouted, loud enough to be heard over the screaming mob.
"Here!"
People backed away from him at his shout, and he tossed one of the blades in a high arc through the air. It spun above the crowd in a shimmer of steel. Vale snatched it out of the air, the throw perfectly weighted to slap the hilt into his hand. Then he sheared the metal contraption off a lunging alligator's skull with one vicious slice. Irene let out a breath, unaware that she'd stopped breathing. Apparently, both Kai and Vale possessed previously unappreciated keen fighting reflexes. Taking down a giant robot centipede seemed comparatively simple in retrospect. Kai shouted something in a Chinese dialect that Irene didn't recognize, perhaps a battle cry or a curse, and leapt into the fight. He impaled one alligator, closing its jaws with a single saber thrust just before the creature could bite into a waiter. Irene sidled further along the table and tried to think of a plan. The alligators weren't showing any interest in the piles of spilled food that littered the floor. And while she wasn't an expert on reptilian psychology, animals would normally go for an abundance of convenient meals rather than armed dinner guests, whether in the grip of a feeding frenzy or not. So maybe the buzzing metal things bolted onto their heads were controlling their behavior. A theory that seemed borne out from observation of Vale's former aggressor. The alligator which had been de-metal objected by Vale had retreated and was currently wandering around in a dazed way. That was promising. If they could de-weaponize all the alligators, then they'd have, well, they'd have a mob of normal alligators, which wasn't much, but it would be something, especially as neither fey magic nor the language use was working. Bradamant, however. Irene sprinted along her table, skirts in hand. Bradamant was a table and an alligator-infested stretch of floor away. The table wasn't a problem. The chunk of floor was. And there were people dying out there. She just didn't have time to think about that. It was clear to her left, clear to her right.
"Stay up here,"
an elderly gentleman sputtered behind her.
"Dash it, girl. Don't go committing suicide. Wait just a minute and the police will be here."
No, she couldn't wait. She tried to rationalize why, as really all the screaming, shooting and sounds of ripping flesh were irrelevant to her mission to get the book, to her duty as a librarian. She could just stay put. But as she tried to shut out all the unimportant noises, she found herself already acting. She swung away from the man and dropped onto the floor, running for the other table. A man was lying under it, tumbled across a fold of fallen white cloth. He was bleeding freely, which meant that he was still alive. Irene pulled herself up onto the table, vaguely conscious that her skirt was fouled with blood and salmon.
"Bradamant!"
she called, pitching her voice to carry above the noise.
"Yes?"
Bradamant came stalking down the table, brushing aside other men and women by sheer force of personality. Her hair was still perfect, and her gown was only stained at the very edges.
"I hope you have something useful to say."
Irene forced down her hostility.
"I do. I have an idea, but I'm having problems with the language. I need your help."
For a moment, she wondered if Bradamant was going to put conditions on that help, but the other woman barely hesitated.
"What do you have in mind?"
Irene pointed up at the chandelier, the elegant, huge, electric-lit chandelier.
"The things on the alligators' heads are specific and discreet. Use the language to call electricity down into them. Even if it doesn't kill them, it'll wreck their control systems."
Bradamant turned her head to follow Irene's gesture.
"It might also kill some of the guests if they're in contact," she said neutrally.
Irene hadn't thought of that. It only took a moment to imagine Vale or Kai with their blades in an alligator.
"So be precise in your language," she snapped. "Or do you want me to find the vocabulary for you?"
Bradamant sniffed.
"I don't think that I will need your help for that endeavor."
Her tone suggested Irene's total incompetence would render any assistance worthless. Irene should have let her get on with it, but a sudden thought struck her.
"When did you come through from the library?" "We have no time for this discussion," Bradamant declared. "Stand back and let me work."
Irene stepped back and scanned the crowd as Bradamant prepared. Silver was easiest to spot. He'd found an ornate pike and was busy impaling an alligator with it, gullet to tail. Vale and Kai were back to back, surrounded by half a dozen alligators. No one else was being targeted so heavily. She couldn't recall anything from Dominic Aubrey's notes about the Iron Brotherhood. They were fairly obviously anti-fey, what with shooing their alligators with cold iron and staging the attack here and now. But she wouldn't have thought that made them anti-Vale. Quite the opposite, really. Vale clearly had no particular liking for the Fae, and his attendance here was adversarial rather than friendly towards Silver. Were the alligators being somehow specifically directed? Or were they simply attacking those people who offered the most resistance? Irene turned back to Bradamant as the other librarian called.